From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Here's a hard irony. Latest surveys show the Arctic holds a huge store of untapped oil and natural gas. And it's the burning of oil and natural gas that's melting the Arctic, turning its ecosystem upside down. Oil companies and countries want that oil. Environmentalists call drilling there obscene. Last month, those forces clashed in the Russian Arctic. Now, the Greenpeace protesters are in Russian prison, charged with piracy, facing long terms. This hour on Point, the oil showdown and fallout in the Russian Arctic. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you know this story? Greenpeace trying to hang banners from a Russian rig, Russian special forces commandeering their ship, clapping them in prison. What are the stakes here? Joining me first today from Moscow is Veronika Dmitrieva. She's just back from the prison in far northern Murmansk, where the so-called Arctic 30 are being held, including her longtime companion, Andrei Alakredrov. Veronika, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, thank you.
I understand you've just traveled to this prison in Murmansk. How far is that from Moscow, Veronika?
I've been there last week. It is 2,000 kilometers to the north of Moscow. It's a two-hour flight.
You went a long way to see your longtime companion. Is he with the, in total, 30 Greenpeace protesters and more who are being held there, Veronika? Is he with them in prison?
Yes, this is correct. He is part of the team of Arctic Sunrise that was detained.
And what was he doing there?
Well, his job is he's the head of press desk for Greenpeace Russia, and on the ship he was a press secretary, so his job was to connect with media and report to the media about what's going on.
A press secretary on board the ship, Russian, covering what's happening here. What was he able to tell you about what happened on September 18th, running into September 19th, when Greenpeace was trying to hang banners from the rig in the Arctic? And what happened?
Well, he told me that he told me that it was quite dramatic, because he said they were outside on the ship, on the outside part of it, and they saw the helicopter above their heads. And he said that about 15 people, they're not exactly the police officers, they are actually FSB, it is B troop.
Kind of commandos, yes.
They descended from the helicopter onto the ship, about 15 people, and they told me, and they told them to lie their face down on the floor, and they were holding their weapons above their heads, and so that they don't move. It was all happening on the upper deck of the ship. So they were lying on the deck, their face down, with the armed people around them, and it lasted for about an hour. And he said it was pretty cold there, but they were not, obviously, they were not allowed to get some warm clothes or anything. And he said, were they rude to you? Did they use any violence? And he said they were not too violent, although when somebody took out a pack of cigarettes in his hand, one of these officers with his foot, hit the hand of this person to get the cigarettes out of it. But other than that, he said that he didn't see any,
Veronika Dmitrieva, is he among those now facing piracy charges? Has he been charged personally with piracy?
Yes, he has been charged with piracy as part of the organized group.
Did he have anything to do? Was he boarding the oil rig himself, or was that others?
No, actually, he was not boarding those boats. He was not on those boats. When it all happened, he remained on the ship, and he was with his computer trying to set up some kind of a press release or something. So he didn't even see how it was happening.
In Russian law, you can get 15 years in prison for piracy. Is your companion, Andrei Alekverdov, worried about exactly that kind of long term? Does that seem possible to him? Hello, Veronica, are you there? We may have lost that line to Moscow. With us now from Moscow is Daniel Sanford. He's Moscow correspondent for the BBC. Daniel, thanks very much for joining us. Let me put the same question to you. Is this journalist working as a press secretary for Greenpeace and the rest, the 29 others in the so-called Arctic 30, are they really up against potential 15-year sentences?
Yeah, they absolutely are. All 30 of them face exactly the same charge at the moment, and that is, as Veronica said, the charge of piracy as part of an organised group. And the sentence for that charge is between 10 and 15 years in a penal colony, in other words, what we would think of as a prison. And these prisons, I should say, aren't kind of a city prison. They're prisons in far-off parts of Russia, which look very much like you would imagine the prisons of the Soviet era to look.
Veronika Dmitrieva, I think we have you for just another minute here. Are you worried that your companion could face actually that kind of long prison sentence? Does that seem like a real possibility to you? Well, can't get her again there. Sorry. Veronika Dmitrieva, thank you for joining us earlier today. Daniel, you've been up to this rig. Can you describe where it is and what Russia is up to with its Arctic drilling?
Well, to get to the rig, you fly up to the city of Arkhangelsk, which is right on the edge of the Arctic in northern Russia. And then it's a 2.5-hour flight from there in a propeller aircraft, an old Soviet Antonov 26, up to a tiny air base on the shore of the Arctic Ocean. And from there, it's a half-hour helicopter flight in an Mi-8, an old Soviet helicopter. You have to go on wearing survival suits like you do in many offshore rigs in cold waters, out to the oil rig. But when you get there, it looks quite similar to how you would imagine an offshore oil rig anywhere else in the world to look. We're familiar with them in the UK, in the North Sea. You're familiar with them in the United States, off your Pacific coast. And it looks not that different to any other oil rig that you've seen offshore, apart from the fact that the main tower on the oil rig is enclosed, and that's to prevent the ice growing on the tower and fouling up the machinery.
Is Russia
looks like
drilling
a well-run rig?
Yeah, are they drilling already, Daniel?
Like
are they exploring?
They
are they drilling
already?
Pumping what?
They're not pumping yet. They're drilling. They've already gone down for the first well, and they're now drilling a lateral horizontal bore out to where the oil field is for their first well. They're intending to start pumping oil by the end of the year, and that would be when they start that, Russia's first offshore Arctic oil rig pumping oil.
And can you describe what happened on this evening and night of September 18th, 19th? What exactly was there? What kind of vessels did Greenpeace have? What did they attempt to do? We heard a little bit from Veronica, but in your own words, what was Russia's response operationally on the ground there?
Well, we're very fortunate because we have videos from both sides of the operation, not only of Greenpeace released videos, but also Russia's FSB. That's one of the successor organizations to the infamous KGB, also filmed their side of the operation. What you see is Greenpeace coming along on inflatable dinghies with big outboard motors.
These have been launched from the larger ship there, I guess, the dinghies?
Yeah, exactly. The dinghies have come off, the inflatables have come off their larger ship, which stayed quite a long way back from the oil rig. They then arrive beside the oil rig, throw up lines, and two of the activists pull themselves up onto the side of the rig and start trying to tie themselves on. This is all happening in kind of half daylight, probably early morning. But then the FSB turn up in their inflatable boats. There's actually gunshots fired into the water by the FSB. They start pulling at the safety lines of these activists, and eventually the two activists that had got onto the rig are pulled off and taken away by the FSB. All the other activists go back to their boat. And it was the next day that this dramatic helicopter raid took place, where the helicopters from the FSB hovered over the Arctic Sunrise, the Greenpeace ship. All these guys in balaclavas abseiled down onto the rappelled down onto the surface of the ship and then took everybody into detention at gunpoint and held them in the mess of the ship, in the canteen of the ship.
They're all facing piracy charges now. And on top of that, Russia has now said they found drugs, illegal drugs on the ship. Greenpeace says if they were there at all, they were there for in the medical kit. You're saying these are serious charges. Russia may go with all 30 of these from 18 different countries, put Greenpeace in prison for 15 years more?
Yeah, look, the Russian legal system works in that you basically get investigated on a charge. So quite early in the process, you get charged while the investigation continues. Mm-hmm. And the holding charge, as it were, is this piracy as part of an organised group. And quite early on, we all thought that would go away quite quickly, not least of all because President Putin himself said these people clearly aren't pirates. Of course, they're not pirates, he said, though they did violate international law, was how he put it. And at that stage, it seemed like the piracy charge might go away quite quickly. Well, it hasn't. And now we're in a situation where other charges are being discussed. This issue of the drugs being found on the ship, though certainly one of the drugs was morphine, which most of us think of as being a medicinal drug. And also the charge of endangering the life of the officials. That's because one of the Greenpeace boats bumped into one of the FSB boats during the raid.
Here's some tape. This is from late August. Agence France-Presse AFP recorded interviews with Greenpeace activists on this ship, the Arctic Sunrise, headed up toward that Russian rig. This was Christy Ferguson, identified as a Greenpeace campaigner, on board the ship on their way into the Arctic, explaining what the group was doing.
Right now, the Arctic Sunrise is crossing into the Northern Sea Route, despite Russian authorities' attempts to keep us out. We're going to expose and confront dangerous oil drilling in the Russian Arctic National Park. It seems the Russian authorities have something to hide, but we're going there to document and expose it.
Now, presumably, she is in prison, and maybe for a long time. Here's sound of that altercation. This is Greenpeace activists attempting to scale the Russian oil rig to hang a protest banner and maybe lash themselves to the rig. Russian authorities descended using helicopters and megaphones. Here's the encounter. And then Russian authorities arriving at that Perozhlomnaya oil platform, you'll hear the gunshots. Direct from the Arctic. Now there are a lot of people in prison. Russia not apologizing. They're going ahead to prosecute here. But earlier, President Putin said, this was last month at the International Arctic Forum in Salakhard, Russia, that while the actions were criminal, he said, charges of piracy, said the Russian leader against the protesters, he said, were inappropriate.
It's obvious they are not pirates, but they tried to storm the platform. Our security forces and border troops did not know who exactly was trying to seize the platform under the Greenpeace guise. It's obvious these people violated international law by coming dangerously close to the platform.
Not pirates, said the Russian leader, but those are the charges, and they're looking at potential long terms. This weekend, Artur Akopov, chief of the oil platform there, owned by the state-run Russian oil company Gazprom, told the BBC, Daniel Sanford's network here, that Greenpeace activists could have caused injury or threatened the environment by attempting to scale the Arctic rig.
By coming so close, Greenpeace could have damaged the base of the platform. When they threw up their equipment, they could easily have hit somebody. Or they might have ruptured one of the pressurized pipes and caused a diesel spill.
Daniel Sanford is Moscow correspondent for the BBC. He's been there. Daniel, lots to look at here, but first just Russia's interest in Arctic oil. How much is up there? How serious is the Russian government about going to get it?
They are very, very serious about it. Russia's always known that the Arctic is one of its biggest assets. Not just because of the oil and gas there, but also because of the Northern Sea Route, the route that runs across the north of Russia all the way from China to the big markets of Western Europe. They know they can make money from ships passing through. But some estimates here, and they're not exaggerated as far as I can tell, say that 20% of all the world's unexploited oil and gas lies in the Russian Arctic. So it's big, big money up there. The only thing is that it's hard to get at. And so far, the oil price hasn't really been right for people to go out there. But that's that factor is changing because as the ice cap melts, it's becoming easier to drill in those Arctic oceans, and therefore the cost of drilling out there is going down, and so it's becoming more commercially viable to get that oil and gas out, and Russia intends to do that, and they don't want Greenpeace to stop them.
Now, of course, Russia is not the only country that's been interested in this. There's been drilling north of Alaska. There were problems with that last year, all kinds of problems, and there's been a reconsideration of sort of regulations that would cover that kind of drilling. We'll see what happens there. We heard the Greenpeace protester on the ship on the way to the Arctic there, Christy Ferguson, saying that the Russian authorities have attempted to keep them out. Did Greenpeace, I mean, they've been up there before, right? Did they have reason to know or think that the Russian authorities would be tougher this time, Daniel?
Well, they went up last year and they staged a similar protest and they were basically kicked off and allowed to go on their way. As you say, they tried to get in earlier this summer and the Russian authorities had pushed them away and told them they weren't welcome. At that point, they turned off the transponder on their ship and came in anyway. The warning sign for them should have been how Russia has been dealing with activists in the last 12 months, most infamously with the Pussy Riot case, the women, young women from a punk group who danced in a cathedral in Moscow, who got sent to prison for 2 years, but also lots of other protesters, street protesters complaining about President Putin and how he's running the country, have found themselves sitting in prison. A whole group of them sat in prison for a year, even before their trial started. And those should have been the warning signs for Greenpeace. Things have changed here. There's a lot more repressive attitude to activism here. And that should have been the warning sign for Greenpeace. And if they hadn't warned their activists, and we're not clear yet whether they had, if they hadn't warned their activists that this was the risk they were running, then perhaps that was a little unfair.
The Arctic Sunrise, a Netherlands-registered vessel. The Netherlands is raising a lot of noise about this. They're not alone in that. The parents of British freelance video journalist Karen Bryan, who is, along with the other 29, charged with piracy, have called the charges ludicrous. Here they are in an interview with the BBC last week. You'll hear Karen's father, Andy Bryan, first, then his mother, Anne Bryan.
Given what Putin had said last week about the fact that they clearly weren't pirates, the announcement that they were being charged with piracy was just absolutely stunned us.
How can two people armed only with a banner and a piece of rope climb up an oil rig, how can they seize an oil rig?
Well, they weren't out to seize it, but they were certainly out to protest it. There have been protests all over about the Arctic 30, they're being called. Actor Jude Law, one of many people who have gone into the streets protesting the detainment. Here's Jude Law.
The conviction that's being threatened is one of piracy, which is ludicrous, seeing as the rig that they were on, they were campaigning on last year, and they walked away. Obviously, if it's a rig, it's not a vessel. And if it's not a vessel, then they can't be pirates.
Jude Law saying these aren't pirates. Daniel Sanford has been out to the rig. He joins us from Moscow. We'll talk with Greenpeace in a moment. Laura's with us right now from Hyannis, Massachusetts. Hi, Laura. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to make a quick comment, if I may. I think the whole thing is horrible, and I just think that when millions of gallons of oil are spilled into the ocean, not one person goes to jail, but yet if people try to defend our environment, they go to prison. Okay. Having said that, I just like to ask if anyone knows who is actually coming internationally to the defense of these 30 people.
We'll hear from Greenpeace on that in just a moment. Danford, Daniel, first of all, what about their legal representation in Russia? And what about beyond that? Have people rallied? We've just heard some right there. How widespread is that to their defense?
Well, look, the legal representation seems to be okay at the moment. They have lawyers visiting them in their CISO, in these detention centres where they're being held, and they're representing them in court. And the various embassies, including the US embassy, getting involved for the Captain Pete Wilcox and the British embassy. We've got six British people in detention there, the British embassy getting involved. But the problem is, when you're dealing with Russia, it's not always an easy task. You can't just knock on Russia's door and say, hey, you shouldn't be detaining these activists, please let them free. You have to negotiate quietly, be careful not to offend, understand where Russia's coming from. And it's quite a tricky negotiation. And of course, meanwhile, Greenpeace expressing international outrage about what's going on, big protests taking place in some countries. You have 1,000 or so people out in London at the weekend. But if anyone is really serious about getting these activists out of prison and not allowing a trial to take place, that's going to be a very, very, very delicate negotiation. The Russians won't respond well to being called crooks and criminals and oil thieves and the various things they've been said about them. And that's the difficult task that the diplomats face at the moment. How do they try and persuade Russia to change their mind on this?
Russia has not been much in the way of bending lately. All kinds of response to this story online. Interestingly, Americans defending the Russian government some here. Maverick says they boarded Russian turf. Now Russia boards them. David says, pay the price. Everyone knows the Russians play hardball. Wow. Diane says that would be a dangerous expansion of the definition of piracy. Greenpeace is out there doing what we should all be doing. And here Brian writes, Russians think out of sight, out of mind, but this one's going to backfire. The Greenpeace 30, Arctic 30 are heroes in the fight against global warming. There's the split right there. Interesting. Let's go to Greenpeace. Phil Radford joins us right now from Washington. He is executive director of Greenpeace USA. He's been a promoter of this kind of confrontation that Greenpeace has become so famous for. Phil Radford, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
What do you know about the conditions in which these Greenpeace protesters are being held, Phil?
Well, you've heard some of it on the show until now. People are in different prisons scattered around, you know, within about 250 kilometers of Murmansk. The cells are cold. You know, some of them don't have lights out at night for some of the people. But I think what we're hearing in general from the Arctic 30 is that they, you know, they never thought they were above the law. They just wanted to show to the world that this dangerous deep-sea oil drilling could cause a spill that the U.S. Coast Guard calls their nightmare scenario because it's so tough to clean up in the Arctic. And also that if we do exploit, you know, this 20% of the remaining oil and gas reserves in the world and these new extreme forms of energy, then we'll have runaway climate change. And so I think the cold cells and the lights all day or 24 hours a day are tough, but I also think that the activists are incredibly committed to the reason that they went there in the first place.
What was their actual operational goal? What do they want to physically do on the day, on September 18, 19, when they were out there by the rig, Phil?
You know, the plan was to hang a banner from the Gazprom rig. You know, you hear some funny things about it. We could have broken it. You know, Gazprom has said that they build their rigs to withstand torpedoes and huge ice chunks in the Arctic. And so I think a rope and two human beings and a banner on the side won't do much other than tell the world that we need to be sane and stop Arctic drilling, both to prevent oil spills that we can't clean up and also to prevent runaway global warming.
There's a lot of oil, we're told. The U.S. most recent survey, a lot of oil in the Arctic, American, Russian, all of it. As Greenpeace, I mean, Shell was up there trying to look around for oil off the coast of Alaska. Did Greenpeace protest them, Phil?
We did. We actually, right after the BP oil spill, there a lot of the Shell rigs that were heading up to the Arctic to do the exploration, we protested there. We actually used some BP oil to paint no Arctic drilling on one of the rigs. We also did protests, or Greenpeace in New Zealand did protests of a lot of the ships heading towards the Arctic, and we worked incredibly hard to make sure that as Shell consistently made mistakes and violated the law, that the Obama administration was shining the light on that and making sure that fundamentally they stopped because it just wasn't working. They weren't able to do it well.
The head of your outfit, Kumi Naidu, the international mm-hmm. head, has offered to himself go into prison in Russia to get these 30 out. He's asked Vladimir Putin to let him do that. Any response to that?
Yeah, I think it was a great moral move. You know, Kumi comes out of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, actually had to flee South Africa during the anti-apartheid movement. And I thought it was a really courageous step to take. He said, look, our folks aren't pirates, and we should sit down and have a real dialogue about this. And what he had learned in the anti-apartheid struggle is that dialogue is really important. And so he offered to move his life to Russia for the duration of the trial if the Russian courts would allow the Arctic 30 out on bail during that trial. And if the Russian courts would enter into a negotiation to discuss what real charges would look like on this and drop the drop the piracy charges.
Phil Radford, Daniel Sanford, stand by. Let's hear from some of our listeners. Scott in Nashville, Tennessee. Scott, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, I just want to make a comment. I think that Greenpeace has done an excellent job of bringing this to the forefront by getting arrested, and it's a multinational team that was arrested, so the whole world is going to have to interact with it. I think Putin made a huge mistake. That was all I had to say.
Huge mistake putting them in prison. We'll see how that turns out. This story's not over. Mark in Virginia Beach, Virginia, you're on the air. Mark, thanks for calling.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me. My point is that, you know, it's all right to protest, but when you're protesting in somebody else's country, somebody else's water, and on somebody else's property, when you're not supposed to there and you're violating the law, well, you know, ignorance of the law doesn't apply in this country, and it shouldn't apply in any other country. What? If they break the law, they should suffer the consequences. What? I'll take my your comments off the air.
Okay, Mark, let me get one more. Lee, Oklahoma City. Lee, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Well, I have a simple comment. Imagine if they came to the Gulf of Mexico or any other region in the United States and did the same thing. What do you think the United States would do?
Do you think they'd put them in prison for 15 years? Pardon? Do you think they'd put them in prison for 15 years?
Well, they should. Imagine if they came into your house. They don't like the way you decorate your house or something like that. They went in someone else's waters. They went into someone else's business. Because of what? Because they believe in something?
Lee, what if they believe that
the Arabs believes as well?
Okay, but what if they think the global climate is being destroyed and they're exercising civil disobedience? Is there a place for that in your worldview?
The world is being destroyed by man-made effects. You are right about that. But that does mean that they have to go to that particular area and climb in rigs and disturb the peace there?
Disturb the peace. Phil Radford, respond to some of this criticism.
Well, first I'd like to say I actually really like how Lee's house is decorated, and so I'm not going to go into his house because of that. You know, I agree with the first and the second callers. You know, Greenpeace doesn't believe that we are above the law. In fact, the activists went into doing a protest eyes wide open that there were some rules they were breaking, like going onto an oil rig without permission. But to then have the Russian military go into international waters after they'd already arrested the two protesters, to go into international waters a full day later to arrest 28 people, two of whom are independent journalists, and to take a ship in complete violation of international law was incredibly extreme. So Greenpeace certainly doesn't think that we are above the law whatsoever. But there are some of our volunteers and activists who are willing to take personal risk because they think there's a far bigger risk out there, which is exactly what Lee said, that we are destroying our planet, that we are causing climate change. And some people are willing to take a risk to create a bigger story, like the first caller said, to bring attention to the world.
That's commitment. 15 years risk. That is deep commitment if they were eyes wide open on that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Russia's piracy charges against Greenpeace over protesting Arctic oil drilling. We've got high drama, big issues, protesters in prisons. We'll hear from an oil and energy expert in just a moment. Lots of reaction online. As Daniel Sanford says, Russia's been coming down hard on all kinds of protests lately. Scott writes to us on Facebook, first they came for Pussy Riot, then they came for the gays, then they came for the environmentalists. Saeed says, pansy Russians. Here in America, our FBI monitors these type of activists, so this would have never happened here. Mike says, I do not believe the trumped-up drug charges. Russians are saying they found raw opium, morphine on the ship. Greenpeace says nonsense. Mike says their legal system is totally corrupt, as is their government. Jonathan writes, nobody messes with Putin's cash cow. It's not like Greenpeace hasn't gone into harm's way before. 1985, famous operation, two French operatives sank it. The flagship of the Greenpeace fleet, the Rainbow Warrior. Captain Peter Wilcox, who was at the helm of the Rainbow Warrior, was also captain on the Arctic Sunrise. He is among those now in prison. In the Rainbow Warrior case, a photographer drowned during the incident. Here, a sympathetic radio announcer covers the sinking of the Rainbow Warrior. 1985, Greenpeace.
It's a tragic end to what was probably the world's number one peace vessel, small as she was. In recent months, Rainbow Warrior has plied from Pacific Island to Pacific Island, moving people from the ravages of the troubled years we live in. What blew her up and killed a man of peace?
Let's go to Buffalo, New York. Genevieve is calling. Hi, Genevieve. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to add something here. I totally support Greenpeace, and I think the cause is worth fighting for. I just get this feeling like there's a lot of complaining, like they've been victimized by Russia. And I feel like I've just been reading Martin Luther King. I'm teaching a class and a letter from Birmingham Jail. Like, if you're protesting an unjust system, don't be surprised if you get treated badly, but take the moral high ground and kind of speak to the world. But
hey, that's great, but do you know how long Martin Luther King was in the Birmingham Jail?
A few months.
No, I mean days. We're talking 15 years. How about it?
Well, okay, that's long. I guess, I mean, then you have to have somebody who's committed and says, this cause, fighting global warming, is worth my life, worth this huge sacrifice. I'll be a martyr. But that's what you need to know going in.
That's a pretty incredible sacrifice. Phil Redford, what do you see as the stakes here that might make it worth someone signing up? I mean, I suppose we have to hope it's not 15 years, but, you know, risking a long prison term to make this protest. What are the stakes, Phil?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody imagined going in and being charged with incredibly trumped up piracy charges, which just every international expert thinks that there's no way that's the case. But if you look at the risk to all life on Earth from global warming, it's really dramatic. You know, scientists are saying that from overfishing, for example, up to half of all of our fisheries around the world could be basically commercially extinct by 2050. Scientists are concerned that sea levels could rise by up to 3 feet by the end of the century or mid-century, which could wipe out a lot of coastal areas where most people live. There are real impacts here, even concerns that a lot of the most, you know, the best croplands in the U.S. and Mexico could be more like a dust bowl. And so we're talking about whether or not the Earth can actually sustain the life that exists, including the human population at its current size. And so there are a lot of committed people who are saying, looking 50 years out, we have to act right now, and we will personally take action to spur the world to do that.
That is commitment. Phil, Daniel Sanford, please stand by. Heather Conley joins us right now from Washington. Heather Conley is Senior Fellow and Director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She has spent a lot of time looking at energy resources around the world. Heather Conley, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What is the Arctic oil profile? How much is up there? How much interest is there in pulling it out?
Well, in 2008, the U.S. Geological Survey suggested that there would be about 30% of the world's undiscovered gas resources and 13% of undiscovered oil resources. And that, of course, launched sort of the headlines of the great oil and gas race in the Arctic. I think over the last several years, and in particular impact of the U.S. Shale gas tight oil phenomenon, we're starting to see a shift in the keen interest in Arctic oil and gas. For instance, a very large Russian gas field Shtokman has been postponed because global gas prices have changed and been lowered so dramatically because of U.S. shale gas, and which has allowed global liquefied natural gas, LNG, and it's changed the pricing patterns. Now, oil, obviously, it's still a very, very valuable commodity, but the Arctic exploration is so expensive, technology, investment, it's a very long time horizon. And we'll see if, again, the unconventional oil and gas phenomena starts changing global oil patterns as well. To get back to a point that I think that Daniel had raised earlier, I think the Russian reaction to the Arctic sunrise is greater than oil. This is about Russian sovereignty. You have to understand that the timing of this, it occurred right in the middle of a major sort of show of military muscle in the Northern Sea Route. President Putin has reopened a closed military installation in the very high north in the Arctic, was closed for the last 20 years. They just completed military exercises off the Kola Peninsula. This is a Russia that is demonstrating not only that it wants Western companies to come in and help it explore oil and gas, but that it maintains firm control and sovereignty over this. We just had a Chinese container shipment, the Yongshen, for the first time traverse the Northern Sea Route. They want this to be a major hub, and they want it to be open to international trade, but they also want to maintain a firm, firm grip on sovereignty. And these two forces are playing against each other. You add that to a very difficult political climate in the last 12 months, as Daniel noted as well, and you get a very big overreaction to what has happened. And it has the potential to unwind what I would consider Russian cooperation in the broader picture of the Arctic. It has a very, very strong chance of really doing a great deal of damage.
All of this emerging, Heather, in part, at heart, because of dramatic climate change, dramatic ice cap melt, things opening up that have not been open before in the Arctic, Heather.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we are seeing, as scientists say, both profound and disturbing changes. The change that we're seeing between the melting of the polar ice cap, the calving, these ice sheets that are breaking off off Greenland, coastal erosion, ocean acidification. It's a major challenge to the fishing stocks, to the mammals. It's profound. The opportunity that the Arctic coastal states see as the economic opportunity to turn the Northern Sea Route into a major artery. It cuts 3,500 miles off of an east-west trading route. It cuts down on travel time. And so there's the opportunity, but the challenge is absolutely profound. And we are extremely concerned about the impact of indigenous populations. People don't realize that 4 million people live in the Arctic. This is not Antarctica, where there are no people. This is where people live, and their climate is being profoundly changed.
Not to mention all the wildlife there. We've seen the images of huge gatherings of walrus on tiny spits of land because ice floes are gone. Daniel Sanford in Moscow. Here you've got Greenpeace saying it is obscene to drill for oil in the Arctic, which is being just turned upside down and melted by no small part fossil fuel emissions. To go after more fossil fuels there, obscene, kind of morally or environmentally obscene. Is there responsiveness to that within Russia? Does the Russian leadership care about that kind of argument, Daniel?
They say they care, and President Putin prides himself on his care for wildlife. And certainly there are environmentalists here. Obviously, you spoke to Veronica earlier in your program, but also I spent 2 weeks with WWF Russia up in the Arctic in August. Our documentary goes out this weekend. And there we saw amazing scenes of walruses, of polar bears, of Arctic fox, of snowy owls. And yes, people are worried about that wildlife. I think the problem is, if the economics are right, it'll be very, very difficult to prevent the inevitability of oil drilling there. And that leaves the environmentalists, apart from Greenpeace, really struggling to try and make sure that when the oil drilling starts, there are some kind of controls on those most precious and stunningly beautiful bits of the Russian Arctic to try and make sure that at least those bits of the Arctic are protected. The big problem with the Arctic is the cold sea, which means if there is an oil spill, it won't disperse quickly, it'll be very difficult to skim, and if it's frozen over, almost impossible to skim. And also, the Arctic is like a giant pond. It's only got one little inlet at one end near Alaska and one little outlet at the other end near Iceland. And otherwise, it doesn't really mix with the other oceans. And so once you've got oil in there, it doesn't flush itself out in the way that you might, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico.
Phil Redford, is that your concern? Destroy the Arctic seas? Destroy the global climate? Where's the heart of your concern?
It's both. You know, if we, as you mentioned, cleaning up an oil spill in the Arctic could be nearly impossible. Add to the ice, add to the fact that the water doesn't mix with other parts of the oceans. Add to that that for much of the year it's pitch black. And so if you have a spill in the towards the end of the drilling season, it's really hard to clean it up when you have huge ice chunks and it's pitch black out there.
Or even stop it, I suppose. I mean, it could hypothetically go all winter, which is long.
Right, absolutely. So you have that problem, and then you also have climate change, where it is perverse. You know, burning oil, coal, natural gas, and all these dirty energy sources has released all this carbon pollution that's warming the atmosphere and causing global warming. And to see the impacts of global warming, like the Arctic melting, and then to say, well, that's great. We can drill for more of this and continue to be addicted to oil, is really perverse, and it's kind of a sick irony. So we're there for both, to stop both, and it's been done before. We've actually passed a moratorium on any extraction or industrial activity in Antarctica, and that's been going on for about 40 years since Greenpeace and other groups first passed that. We think we can do it in the Arctic. Of course, Gazprom doesn't like it, but it will take millions of people standing up around the world and WWF and our allies to make that happen.
What about Heather's argument that the economics of oil right now may deter drilling there for a long time? You've got all the shale oil, gas, and new oil coming out of the U.S. and extreme drilling. Maybe people won't really go for the Arctic. It's too expensive.
Well, that's why we're in this critical decision point for governments like Russia's government, the U.S.'s government. We don't need this oil yet. In fact, Gazprom, it spills more oil on the land in Russia every year than it would get out of this one site where we were protesting. And so there are other ways to either be more efficient or to shift to new and different technologies. We have a minute while gas prices are still rising and oil prices are still rising and we approach peak oil. We have a minute to say, is this really the path we want to go down, where we're militarizing the Arctic because of these resources and where we're causing more global warming and destroying more of these beautiful places? Or should we pause, since we have a minute and the prices aren't there yet for this drilling, and say we can go a different way? We'd like governments to lead in that way.
Heather, does Russia have the technology to do this offshore drilling itself, or would this be American or international firms actually doing it?
Yeah, the Russians don't have great experience on offshore drilling, which is why they've been so inviting to the major oil and gas companies to help them with that know-how as well as their investment. I think another important issue to note is over the last decade how incredibly reliant the Russian budget has become on oil and gas and the taxation policies surrounding that. So I heard a statistic that, 2005, an $80 per barrel cost would meet the needs of the Russian budget. Today, it's something in excess of $120 a barrel that needs to meet this large.
So they're hungry
Petrostate.
For it.
They are very hungry. So this is a very resource dependent. But Phil's absolutely right. If Russia could improve its energy efficiency, if it could go back to its fields in Siberia and apply new technologies, that is where they could gain some added benefits. But that's why I said I think this is, in some ways, it's greater than oil in the resources, although it's certainly a very prominent theme. Mm. This is about asserting Russian sovereignty over this very important era. And it's taking on, I think, greater and greater nationalistic tones for President Putin. On the one hand, absolutely, he is his environmentalist, and he demonstrates that with very, very public displays of that. But on the other hand, it's a very focused energy and resource base for them in the 21st century. Mm. And they're going to develop it. I think we have to do as much as we can to help them do best practices, sustainable practices, but I'm not convinced we will put an end to their quest to explore these resources.
Arctic oil and Greenpeace in prison. Rhonda in Charleston, South Carolina. Rhonda, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. My question is, does President Putin have the ability to either pardon or release these activists just independently of any of the police or the government? And my second comment is, I was recently in the Arctic just a couple months ago, the fourth time I've been to the Arctic, up to the polar ice cap in Greenland. And I can attest to the fact that the oil and gas and particularly mineral companies are putting a lot of pressure on the Inuit and Native peoples there to accept drilling and oil and gas exploration as a method for economic independence. For them.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on the Arctic, a lot of hunger for what's up there. Daniel Sanford, how about it? Putin and a pardon here. I imagine he does have the power to do it if he likes. What's the likelihood?
Yeah, look, I don't know if it'd be a pardon, but there'll be backroom pressure applied right from the top of Russia. That's how it tends to work with these politicized legal cases. There's an enormous amount of control exercised by the Kremlin in these cases that become high profile. I'm not sure at this point in my own mind what it is that would persuade President Putin and those around him to back off in this case. So that's why I'm quite gloomy about the prospects for these activists, because I'm just not quite sure what it is. People might say, well, wouldn't Russia be embarrassed, shamed by the world? Well, we've seen what happened over Pussy Riot, over gay rights, over the other activists that are in prison here, and they haven't backed down over those activists. So I'm not sure why they're going to back down over the Greenpeace 30.
Phil Radford, what are you hoping for? And if they stay in prison, what's it mean for Greenpeace? Just a couple seconds here.
President Putin can pardon them. It's in his power, and it means that Greenpeace will continue to work to save the planet and will continue to take risks, because the risks of not acting are far greater.
Phil Radford with Greenpeace USA, Daniel Sanford with the BBC in Moscow, Heather Conley at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thanks to you all. What a picture. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.